Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. We meet once a week to talk all things Lakers basketball. I'm Trevor Lane. Happy to see y'all here joining us live on the YouTube channel. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you do subscribe. The Lakers on a five-game winning streak. We got some great stuff to talk about tonight, or today, over last night's, after last night's win over the San Antonio Spurs. Joining me, as always, Jason Timpf, Jovan Buha. Jovan, I'll start with you. You are gutting it out here, my friend. The Lakers have dealt with a number of injuries. We've had guys sitting out due to load management. Jovan says, I'm not about that life. I'm here no matter what.
I'm ready to roll. I've certainly been better physically, as you can hear in my voice, but the Lakers are the number two seed in the West right now, and things are going well.
They certainly are. Again, that five-game winning streak. Jason, let's just dive right into it. How are they doing this? They've played nine games. They're 7-2. Austin and Luka have played together a total of four times. LeBron has played zero times. They've had seven different starting lineups. How is this team 7-2 right now?
Man, well, first of all, Jovan knows today's the day where we start talking reckless about the Lakers. So he wasn't about to miss this one by any stretch of the imagination. Well, I think they've cleaned up some margins, which I think have helped. Like, they have a 70% defensive rebound rate in this five-game streak, which was considerably higher than where it was in the first four games. 120 offensive rating, that's really the story. This is a top five offense, and they haven't even gotten all their pieces into place. And they've just consistently been able to score the basketball against good defenses. Like, this is a Spurs team that is a very good defense that pressures the ball. Portland, very good defense that pressures the ball. Miami, very good defense that pressures the ball. And they just keep passing these tests. They have their 10th in turnover rate during this five-game span. To me, I know that doesn't sound super impressive in a vacuum, but when you look at the types of teams that they've been playing in that span and the level of ball handling that's been available to them in that span, I think it's super impressive. They've also been turning opponents over. They're ninth in opponent turnovers per 100 possessions in this five-game span and eighth in scoring points off those turnovers. They're getting 21.4 points per game. Lots of defensive playmaking from guys like Marcus Smart and even Luka Doncic, who had five steals last night. They're just like, they're combining the talent level with really solid basketball execution on both ends of the floor and winning in the margins. Like, they're top 10 in both second chance points and opponents' second chance points in this five game span. That's a margin that they're getting every single game. They're scoring in the paint at will. There's just a lot of really strong metrics. This is the last thing I'll say about it, because, like, when I look at contenders, I always look at like a checklist of things that you got to hit. You got to have an apex star. You got to have an elite unit, like a side of the floor where you're awesome. On the other side of the floor, you've got to be good enough. There has to be a certain amount of versatility and depth to be able to handle 82-game regular season. And you have to not have a crippling weakness. And as I look at this Lakers team, it's like Luka is very much one of those apex guys. That's a big check mark for the Lakers. They absolutely have an elite unit. Their offense, just wait till LeBron gets back. This team is going to cut everyone to shreds. That's a big check mark. So far to start the year, I think they've been playing about as well as they could on defense for the available personnel that they've had. Their depth has been on display as they've continued to win games, as guys have been in and out in the lineup. So we're 4-for-4. And really the big one for me is that athleticism piece, that weakness. So they have a crippling weakness, and I still worry about their athleticism. And on this road trip, especially between the Atlanta game and the Oklahoma City game, we're going to see that get tested. And that will ultimately be the story for this team, is whether or not they can overcome those personnel weaknesses. But, like, I don't know, man. I'm starting to want to talk reckless. They're looking like a really damn good basketball team right now.
Yeah, Jovan, I know you had, I think it was a short that you put out recently that was talking about that. Like, we may just have to accept that the Lakers are a really good team. What are your thoughts on this 7-2 start?
Well, I think all three of us had already accepted that and projected that. But my point was just like, going into the season, people had this group as a six seed, seven seed. Some people had them missing the play-in altogether, which is just absolutely insane. And for them to be 7-2, I think we can't underscore enough how many injuries they've had, and not having LeBron over this stretch, not having Luka for half this stretch, not having Austin for a couple of games, then Gabe has missed most of this stretch. Mm-hmm. Marcus, DeAndre have both been in and out. You know, it's just, this is ridiculous. Like, if you told me before this stretch, Lakers are going to go 7-2, I'd be like, okay, that's like kind of close to their ceiling over these nine games, and they were likely healthy. Then if you actually showed me like game by game who was out, I would be shocked, right? Like, it just, we did not see this coming with who's been out. And so I think that's the biggest thing for me is like they've shape-shifted and problem solved at such a high level in each of these games where I think we can look at some of these statistical trends and some of them are sticky, but they've gotten it out the mud. They've won high scoring games. They've won like relatively low scoring games by like 20, 25 standards. And they've won winning the free throw margin. They've won losing the free throw margin. They've won the turnover battle, lost the turnover battle. Like they've just won in all these different ways that it's been really impressive to me. And I think JJ deserves a lot of credit with this. And, you know, we could talk about Luka's having a historic start. Austin has been amazing. And then all the new guys have hit as well. But JJ has been obviously one of the through lines here that regardless of which players have been in and out, JJ has been the one leading and coaching them. And I think he's largely pushed all the right buttons with the rotations and the lineups and the schematic adjustments and the game plans. I thought he had a brilliant game plan for Wemby, and the fact that they went smaller against him were really physical, pushing him out. His catch points were, instead of trying to get the ball at like 12 feet, they were pushing him out 16 feet, 18 feet, and making him uncomfortable. It was probably the second best defensive performance against Wemby this season outside of that Phoenix game. So I just think JJ's pushed all the right buttons, and he deserves a lot of credit as well.
Speaking of JJ and going smaller against Wemby, we did get a super chat here that segues nicely into this. Ruddy Hood Sports said, the half Lakers are the second best team in the NBA. I wish Rui's name was left out of trade talks. Rui won that game with his clutch three and the Wemby charge. Jason, what are your thoughts? You and I talked earlier in the summer about the Lakers need to upgrade on the wing and potentially looking at, you know, like an Andrew Wiggins or someone like that in place of Rui. What did you see out of Rui last night against Wemby? He wound up in one-on-one matchups with him quite a bit. And what are your thoughts on Rui so far this season? What could that mean for the, you know, the trade possibilities moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I was actually thinking about this this morning as I was watching the Heat Nuggets game, because I ended up getting another up close and personal look at Andrew Wiggins, who's been awesome to start the season. And, you know, I think it's complicated because I think two things are true. I think Rui has been absolutely indispensable to start this season. I have some like absolutely outrageous Rui Hachimura stats. He's 16 for 23 on unguarded catch and shoot threes. That's so ridiculous. He's shooting 17 for 24 from the mid-range, and he's shooting 68% at the rim. Out of 22 players in the NBA to log at least 40 spot-up possessions, Rui's 1.56 points per possession in spot-ups is far and away number one in the entire NBA. He's hooping his ass off. We can give him credit for that. The second piece of it is, though, when LeBron James comes back, his role fundamentally shifts. Right now, he's playing all of his minutes in his natural position group there at the power forward spot. And in order for him to play alongside LeBron, he's going to have to play more on the perimeter on defense. He's going to function more as a small forward. Now, as a team, they will counter that with different, like switching concepts and ways to prevent Rui from having to track shooters over screens and stuff like that. There's certainly ways to address that. My thing is, like, as amazing as Rui has been, I think the decision about whether or not you look to move him comes down to where things are in February, when we have a much larger sample size of what Rui looks like playing more of his minutes at the three versus at the four. And also, like, what's available? Like, we may get to that point and we may be like, damn, like, you know, a 2 second round picks plus Maxi plus Gabe equals this guy. And we'd rather have this guy plus Rui than Andrew Wiggins. You know what I mean? Or we may get there and we may be like, Rui, as he's slotted to the three, some of his defensive shortcomings have come to the forefront. He's starting to slip out of the rotation a little bit because Jake LaRavia and Marcus Smart are winning some of his minutes. Like, now he's a little more inconsistent. Maybe we need to look at like a legitimate starting lineup upgrade. So like my thing is like, he's been awesome. There's no way to possibly oversell that. He's literally been off the charts good, but this is a very different role than he'll be in when LeBron is healthy. So we need to see a lot more before we make up our minds on that front.
Jovan, you the same cautious optimism to a degree on Rui Hachimura? Obviously give him credit for what's happened, but you know, maybe concerned if he does get slid back to the three.
Yeah. I mean, I've been on record going back to the summer that I felt the fifth starter spot should probably be Marcus Smart's based on the roster construction, and that it was no shade at Rui. And like, Rui's been awesome. That's the tricky part here. The thing that I have continued to say with Rui is just, he's a victim of roster construction and just kind of like team construction here, where I got a super chat last night that someone along the same lines, but was highlighting like Rui's defense against fours and fives. And I acknowledge that. And I want to be clear that he was like, he defended Wemby, I think, as well as anyone else did last night, you know, in terms of Lakers defenders. Like, he was physical with him, again, pushing him out from his ideal post positioning and whatnot. The issue is that when the Lakers are whole, they have three other starters who are best at the four and five defensively, with DeAndre Ayton, LeBron James, and Luka. Obviously, with Luka more as a four, but like, those guys are occupying the same spots, and those guys are just ahead of Rui in the pecking order and going to be starting, or you know, at least in the hierarchy of the starting group ahead of him. So that slots him far more as a perimeter guy. And I do think, at least up to this point in the season, we have seen a lot of the same concerns with him in terms of screen navigation, just general off-ball defense, tracking guys, tracking shooters. Like, those things continue to be some of the weaker points for him defensively. So I think two things can be true at once. Rui has done his job and he has thrived in the current role, but his current role is not his projected role moving forward, in terms of right now he's the starting power forward on this team. When LeBron is back, he's not going to be the starting power forward. He'll be the starting small forward, and that is playing him out of position. So I know we were going to touch on the fifth starter thing. Yeah. We could get a little bit more into it, but I think he's playing great, and I do want to highlight and acknowledge that. I just think there are some questions about, once LeBron is back, it does, I think, impact Rui actually the most of anybody.
Yeah, really agreed 100%.
This is an interesting point you're making, Jovan, because I think like there's a conversation to have about, should the Lakers avoid trading Rui, not so much because it's the best thing for this team. Like, in my opinion, if you were to move Rui for a guy like Andrew Wiggins, who plays the small forward position professionally as a two-way wing, who can play, and he's shooting the hell out of the basketball this year and doing all sorts of good stuff, to me, that makes the team better for this particular season. But I do think there's a clear sample size here that goes like, hey, like, is Rui maybe the four for when LeBron's gone? Mm-hmm. And that is where it gets more complicated, because like, if Rui's the four when LeBron's gone, then you can't trade him for a small forward, because then you're just going to open up a hole a year or two from now when LeBron's finally done playing. So if anything, it's not so much that he's played himself out of trade conversations for the sake of this season. It's more so just for the future.
That's a great point. And, you know, I think it ultimately comes down to, you're not going to trade Rui just to trade Rui. You're not going to trade Rui just for a lateral, because he's too good for that. He's too important to this team for that. And when you add in that future piece, I think that certainly matters for the Lakers' decision making. But if there is a move out there that they think can help them win right now, I don't think Rui being a piece that gets added to the deal would be something that would prevent them from doing it, if they think there's something that could really put them over the top. Let's get to this here, because I think this brings us to a larger point. We're talking about this 5-game win streak that I want to get into. Said says, adding Thero and LeBron to this, along with a consolidation trade with Dalton, Gabe, and Maxey, really improves our athleticism and defense. Could be as far as a 12 deep team that can box and match. I wanted to talk about the depth of this team overall. I know there's going to be a lot of talk about consolidation trades, and of course we've got a long time until the February 5th trade deadline, and you know, the athleticism the Lakers could ultimately add. But where are you guys at now, as opposed to where we started the season, now that so many guys have had to step up into a variety of roles, oftentimes in roles that are frankly a little bit above their pay grade, and still found success? Where are you guys at on the depth of this roster, and is that something that will need to be addressed long term?
For me, there's now seven guys that I am close to trusting in a bulletproof manner. And I think that's two more than last season, right? So going back to last, I mean, we saw with JJ closing with the same five guys to close the second half of game four. There was five guys he trusted. So for me, I'm taking four of those five. I'm swapping in, let's say, Marcus Smart to be the DFS replacement. Then I'm adding DeAndre Ayton and Jake LaRavia. So whatever the starting group ends up being, I think there's four starting locks. And I think there are three guys we could argue about for that fifth spot, being Rui, Marcus Smart, and Jake LaRavia, plus the other four of Luka, LeBron, Austin, and DeAndre. Those seven, I trust wholeheartedly in terms of being 82-game players and 16-game players. Then I think you get to a second tier of player, which is Gabe, Vando, and Jackson, where I think those guys are a little bit more matchup and context dependent. You could, like, I think there are series where they make sense, and there are matchups where they make sense, but a little bit more questions about their scalability into a playoff context. With Gabe, we know he could be a streaky shooter. He's also 6'2" and can be picked on defensively. And with the Lakers seeming, you know, just like being okay with switching him onto guys and letting teams dictate the matchups, I think that can be a little problematic. Then with Vando, it's the offense limitations, 1-for-8 on threes this season, I think has shown some growth and improvement as a finisher overall, but is still a clear net negative that you have to scheme for and figure out the optimal way to use him, sometimes even at the expense of like a Jackson or a DeAndre, where I feel like the best way to use Vando is to have him as a screener, but that also then puts Jackson or DeAndre out of the fray. And I don't think you're optimizing your offense in that way. You're kind of just optimizing Vando specifically, but that could come at the expense of your actual points per possession. And then with Jackson, I think he's shown a lot of growth this year, especially defensively. I think the rim protection's been better. The defensive rebounding has been better. We just know, like, sometimes with Jackson, you can kind of tell within the first 2 minutes if it's going to be a good game or not. There's been far more good games than not to start, but he can have this ability to just kind of crash out, and he picks up a couple of quick offensive fouls, and then he starts getting into it with the refs, and then it's sort of like, okay, this Jackson shift should be over. So I think, like, I'm at seven guys I really trust, three guys I kind of trust, and then beyond that, a lot of question marks with the final four guys.
Jason, where are you at? And do the Lakers ultimately need a consolidation trade? Will that rob their depth? Where do you see them in terms of their, how much you can count on? So, I mean, we even saw the big Nick Smith Jr. game. Like, where are they actually at in terms of the depth of this roster?
Yeah, so I think that there has been a clear strength in terms of their depth of, like, refined offensive skill. This was something I was excited about coming into the season, but, like, you know, Jovan pointed out earlier, there was a lot of negativity surrounding the Lakers. I was definitely higher than most. I had them fifth in my contender rankings coming into the season, but they're even better than I thought. I think that we can all agree that, like, because of the leap that Austin took, because of the leap that Luka's taken, because Marcus has looked so much better than we thought he would look, because Jake LaRavia seems to be a hit in this system, they look better than I even thought they would be coming into the season. I mean, I think they're actually threatening, like, real championship contention in a way that I kind of would have laughed off back in September. But as we look at that depth of refined offensive skill, there has been an attempt from JJ to try to find this, like, speed point of attack off ball on offense type of player. And he's been kind of splitting those minutes between Vando and Bronny over the course of the last week. And that, to me, is, it's a look you need to have. There are going to be some matchups where he's going to look at it and be like, man, I like having Austin, Luka, LeBron out there, DeAndre Ayton, but, like, this guy's just a little too fast for Jake, or, you know, Marcus, I just need a little bit more shooting ability from that spot, or whatever it might be. And I think that that ultimately will be the type of player that they're hunting for, essentially, like, a more refined, better version of that 3-and-D primary point of attack guy, that Bronny James, Jared Vanderbilt role that's been being used over the course of the last week. And, like, who knows, like, maybe it all works out and you end up making a kind of fringe move for an athlete. And then Marcus Smart is just healthy and he ends up being that great option. You never have to go that route. But, like, most championship teams, most dead serious contending teams have options. And right now, I agree with Jovan. They've got like seven legit guys, and you could extend that list based on like, okay, well, what kind of basketball are we getting from Gabe? Mm-hmm. You know, that like if this stuff from Jackson Hayes, who's been much sharper this year in a lot of specific details, if those things pan out, great. But out of those seven guys that we trust, none of those seven guys are like elite perimeter athletes. And so getting at least one guy into that list who's like a dude who's like, this guy's specialty is speed and quickness and his ability to guard the ball, and he can be a functioning cog in our offense. I think that's the kind of thing you keep an eye on. And as far as like the trade deadline goes, to me, it's all about being opportunistic. Like, it's about what comes available. Like, if you get to that point and like, there's a dude who can give you 80% of Andrew Wiggins who happens to come available, and you can make that move without giving up any significant, you know, asset return, like someone like a Justin Champagne out of Washington, something like that. You get like a reasonable facsimile of that type of player on the cheap. Great. You jump on it, but like, you don't know what's going to be available at that point. For all the talk about Wiggins, he might literally be unavailable. Like, there's a lot of different types of things that happen around the deadline that dictate what players are available. And I think the Lakers are just going to have to be opportunistic if the right type of athlete comes up.
Yeah, the word that Rob Pelinka has used so much, optionality. They want to have the ability to make that move if and when it becomes available. But right now, it is definitely not trade season yet in the NBA. We've got a little bit to get there. Before we leave the topic of the five-game win streak, we do need to talk about the insane stats that are being put up right now by Austin Reaves and Luka Doncic, and what that is telling us about that pairing. But Jovan, I want to ask you real quick, because you're around the team more than any of us, about the vibes of this group. I was in Memphis and was struck by how different the sort of, I guess, as the kids say, the aura of this team is compared to last season. What have you noticed about it? And do you chalk it up to just winning cures all, or do you think this is truly like a real camaraderie that these guys are developing?
Winning certainly helps, but I do think there's a real camaraderie element to this group. It feels like the closest Lakers team that I have covered up to this point, and I started the 2020-2021 season, so that was coming off of the bubble and the title, and that was a weird year because we were in empty arenas and we were conducting press conferences through Zoom, so no locker room access, no actual like face-to-face access with the players and like going in the locker room and whatnot. But since then, I would say like that team, obviously defending champs, brought back a lot of that group, and then they were undone by injuries. But this group is as close of a group as I've seen since I've covered the Lakers. And I think part of it's like continuity, right? Like they have had, you now have multiple years of LeBron and Austin and Rui and Vando and Gabe and Jackson. And some of these guys have now been here 3+ years. But then you also have Luka. And I think Luka has been, like, people have talked about Luka being more of a vocal leader and him feeling more comfortable. And it's kind of just basic human psychology of he gets shell-shocked, traded in February, a little way, you know, halfway through the season. And then he comes into a new environment. And he, by nature, is a little bit more of like an introverted, quiet guy. So I think it takes him a little bit to assimilate and feel like this is really his team. And then the Lakers do everything in their power to make it clear this summer it is Luka's team. And I think he has taken that leadership role that, you know, he's not, again, like the most vocal guy. I think that's more of like a Marcus Smart type thing. But Luka has his inside jokes, and he's always chirping and kind of trash talking with his teammates, as we've seen with Rui and Austin. So I think that they've brought in guys who have done what, like, they've bought into their roles, they've embraced them. And then you also have a level of continuity with some of the other guys. So I think overall it's been a really fun group. And I think we've seen that by, like, you don't go 7-2 with the injuries that they've had without being together and mm-hmm. believing and not giving up. And I think this has been a real win for Lakers culture, the culture set by JJ Redick. And I think it's been reflected on the court, but it's certainly been reflected off the court as well.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you shouted out JJ there. And you mentioned him earlier as well. Certainly deserves a lot of credit for where they're at. All right, let's talk a little bit about Luka and Austin. Austin right now averaging 31-9-5. I mean, insane. On phenomenal percentage. Well, a little bit low from three, but still almost 50% from the field. Luka, not to be a slouch himself, 40 points 11 rebounds, 9.2 assists, and actually a little bit low on the three-point percent. I think there's upward growth that's coming there. He's only at 31%. I'm rounding up to get there from deep. JC, can you talk to us a little bit about what you've seen from Luka and Austin so far? And have we been able to take anything away from this about them as a duo? Because that's one of the big subplots, of course, of this entire season.
Really quick follow-up on what Jovan said earlier. One of my favorite things to see with a great basketball team is when they start to get addicted to winning. And when they actually start to win on a night-to-night basis, you can almost see like a level of engagement, possession to possession. And JJ keeps calling it connectivity. But like that to me is what happens. It's like a momentous thing when a team starts to be like, wait, like we can do this thing. Like we actually have a shot here. And it actually just brings another level of greatness out of everybody. With Luka and Austin, I want to start by just sharing a couple of basic numbers. Luka is getting 1.33 points per post up to start the season, which is insane, off the chart. He had five more of them last night. It was like spamming post-ups of Steph Castle off of the left block last night. It was a big part of how they kind of changed their attack with some of the ball pressure that they were dealing with. Austin, remember how we talked about his weaknesses against switching from time to time? He's getting 1.15 points per ISO, including passes. So he's been really good there to start the season. And then Luka and Austin have sneaky been two of the very best pick and roll players in the entire league. Out of the 17 players in the NBA to run at least 100 pick and rolls so far this year, Austin is number one in the entire NBA in efficiency, including passes, at 1.24 points per possession. And Luka's number three, just barely behind him. The Lakers as a team have been the number one pick and roll team in the entire NBA at 1.17 points per possession. Austin is shooting 9-for-12 on floaters, including his game winner versus Minnesota, and 69% at the rim. I think the give and take of the two of them as primary creators in that mold of the classic Luka Kyrie, Luka Jalen Brunson mold, I think that fits perfectly. The only thing that's really standing in the way of me like really believing in this group is I want to see Austin improve as a catch and shoot player. So far to start this year, he's just 5-for-16 on unguarded catch and shoot jump shots. That was a huge problem in the Minnesota series last year and has generally been an issue in his career. He's very much a fluid off the dribble type of shot maker. And I think that's like, for the record, I don't want to make it sound skeptical, because I believe in Austin as a competitor and as a smart enough basketball player to know that that's what he needs to work on. But that to me is like the one thing that really stands between like their ultimate potential as a duo and where they are right now, is Austin's got to be able to score off the ball with Luka. And I think a big part of that is him knocking down those catch and shoot threes.
Yova, where are you at on the two of them and what they've done so far, and then as well as a duo?
I just don't know how you stop this team. Like that's my, it feels like what, going back to the 5-game win streak and what we've seen to start the season, it's almost felt like the Lakers are sort of the mindset of, if we can keep this game relatively close with like 5 or 6 minutes left, we're going to out execute you in the half court and in crunch time. And the reason they are capable of doing that is, to Jason's point, they have two of the three best pick and roll players to start the season. And I think it's sustainable. Like, I think Austin has really leveled up with his playmaking and decision making. I think that's been one of the biggest things that stood out to me, is like, there used to be reads that Austin couldn't make or just didn't see coming out of the pick and roll, but his menu of options coming out of it, of just the different ways he can attack both individually and to create opportunities for his teammates, I think that has gone up a level or two. Luka, of course, is already one of the best pick and roll players of all time. He could arguably be the best pick and roll player of all time. But with like Luka, it looks like he's just picked up where he left off from the 2023-24 season. I'm doing a Spectrum segment today, and they're asking me, how many points per game do you think Luka's going to average this season? And I originally was like, all right, 32, like that's very high, but you know, it seems like high number, but obviously like lower than the 40 currently. Then I was thinking about it more. I'm like, we got to bump that up. Let's go 34. Let's say he matches 2024, which I think would be really impressive, playing with Austin and LeBron, those two guys having the usage that they have. But like, Luka's at a level right now where he's clearly at a minimum top three player in the league. You could argue the best player in the league right now, certainly in the MVP mix. And then Austin is looking like an all-star and like third team all NBA guard right now. That combination alone, you know, speaks volumes of their start. But then you also factor in like the Lakers have not even had those guys for the entirety of this run here. And that's what makes this 7-2 start so incredible. Is like, it's not like both of those guys have, they've only played in four of the games, right? They've played nine games. Those two have only played in four games together. So, you know, if anything, that actually kind of hurts maybe Luka's MVP odds. They're 3-1 without him, which people will look at like the record without the player. Right. But yeah, I mean, it's been Luka's third most points in NBA history through five games. And the one guy ahead of him twice is Wilt. So pretty good company.
Yeah, absolutely. Great company to be in. I do want to give a shout out to the super chat here. Said, look at these three goats, man, from Akash. So inspirational. I think you guys should rename the channel as Lakers Off Court Big Three. We just started this thing, man. We're not undergoing a rebrand right now, but we do appreciate
you.
The super chat. That is awesome. Jason, how much, you know, we talk about the efficiency out of the pick and roll. How much of that credit should land on the plate of DeAndre Ayton as the other part of that pick and roll, as well as Jackson Hayes, I think, to a smaller degree? How does that factor into the success that we're seeing from Luka and Austin over the course of the season? And then defensively, is that part of the whole conversation that we were having previously about the need to get more athleticism on the perimeter, looking at can these guys be a long-term duo?
Yeah, you know, when you look at in more detail at the pick and roll stuff, there's areas where they've been strong. Like both Luka and Austin have been very strong in the mid range. We mentioned Austin's floater. Both Luka and Austin have been hitting everything on short twos inside of 17 feet at a really high clip. That's been a big part of their success in pick and roll, but they haven't been hitting their pull up threes. And as a team, you know, aside from a handful of guys, they still aren't shooting the ball super well off the catch. There's still a lot of these like payoff shots where it's like Jake LaRavia got another wide open one in crunch time against San Antonio on the right wing that missed. And there's still some of these where I feel like they can shoot better. What's been carrying the pick and roll is the mid-range scoring of Luka and Austin, and then Ayton and Hayes and the work they've done on the roll. The two of them have been excellent. And that's been like, you know, DeAndre Ayton, it's just really the level of scoring that he can do against a drop coverage when the big positions himself between him and the rim. So, for instance, with Jackson, there's a certain amount of like, if he gets a runway, he's just going to stampede down the lane and dunk on you. But as soon as someone's in the way, whether it be a deeper drop coverage that doesn't let the roller get behind, or if it's a tag of some kind, although I think Jackson's passed the ball pretty well out of the short roll this season, The difference with Ayton is he can catch, and it's not just the mid-range jumper. It's not just the floater. It's also like the quick turn over his left shoulder and hit a little hook shot from like 5-6 feet. When he gets stopped by the screen defender between him and the rim, he has the ability to score there. And that's just allowed a lot of pick and roll sequences that in previous years, you know, obviously not counting Anthony Davis, but previous years, pick and roll sequences where the play would basically come to a screeching halt in the middle of the floor and then we're kicking it out and going again. Ayton's converting those into points. And so that's what gets exciting, because like, for all the talk about how good they've been, this is a team that's had a 120 offensive rating over the win streak. They're fifth in offensive rating overall. They have the second best half court offense in the league, according to Cleaning the Glass. Luka and Austin have been the two of the top three pick and roll ball handlers in the league. I still feel like it can get much better. If Luka and Austin start hitting pull-up threes, you add LeBron into this equation as a connective playmaker, the team as a whole starts shooting catch-and-shoot threes better. Like, I think that this is a team that has the ability to end up like first or second in offensive rating to end the season. I think that's really on the table for them.
Yeah, right now 24th in three-point percentage and 26th in attempts per game. So there is that upside there. There is a higher ceiling they can get to once they get those threes to start dropping. All right, we do need to talk about the upcoming road trip. We'll get into that, but first, a quick shout out to our sponsor. We'll be back in 30 seconds. Don't go anywhere.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right, everybody. And again, big thanks to Sleeper for sponsoring this show. You can find the link in the description down below. I want to throw this out. This super chat said, Logan, I still can't believe Luka is a Laker. I still do that. I find my Luka will do something crazy. He had that insane curved pass across the court the other day. Out, I think it was to a Rui three. And I just thought, oh my, how is Luka in a Lakers jersey? It still feels a little bit surreal. Do you guys find yourself still doing that with Luka?
I go darker. I keep thinking about AD with bilateral Achilles tendinopathy and LeBron with sciatica. And I'm like, with this team, like, if Nico Harrison doesn't do this, where are the Lakers over the next 5 years? Like it is one of the wildest turns of fortune that I can ever remember seeing in any avenue.
If I ever forget that Luka is a Laker, I'm just quickly reminded by Mavs Twitter crashing out every 5 minutes. The 15th seed Dallas Mavericks.
That is a dark place right now. The Mavs. I watched the first half of the Mavs games last night, checking in our old friend D'Angelo Russell and Max Christie, and just seeing that was a tough game to get through. I thought the Lakers game was very disjointed against the Spurs, but boy, the Mavs offense, it is stuck in the mud. But we won't go in depth onto that right now, but whew, down bad in Dallas.
That's bad, yeah.
That's for sure. All right, we've got a five-game road trip coming up. Guys, with Super Chats, I am going to get to those. I'm not skipping anybody, just bouncing around a little bit, but we will get to those, I promise. But the Lakers have a five-game road trip here coming up. The road can often be a place that tests teams, that gives them a chance to really come together and bond. It can also be, you know, there can be some real challenges. They start off with the Atlanta Hawks, and that obviously some athleticism. They've got a lot of wings there, missing Trae Young. Then they've got Charlotte, the big game against OKC, the reigning champs at New Orleans. And then one of the most difficult, I think, second night of a back-to-backs in the season, second night of a back-to-back with a decent length plane flight in between against Milwaukee to close things out. Jason, we'll start with you. What are you looking for in general on this five-game road trip? Like, what are you hoping to see from the team at the conclusion of these five games to say, yeah, this team is legit?
So I look at each of these games, with the exception of the Pelicans game, although they've been weirdly feisty over the last couple. But I look at each of these games, these other four games, as like legitimate like challenges of specific aspects of the Lakers that I think will be revealing. So the Hawks, for instance, they're a really fast team that forces a lot of turnovers and gets out in transition a lot. And they're 2-1 since Trae Young went down. They've been very good on defense this season when Trae Young is off the floor. They have like a very different type of challenge than many of the teams that they face this season. I think that that's a good test of their athleticism. The Hornets game obviously depends on the injuries because Brandon Miller definitely is going to be out. LaMelo Ball has been out. But if LaMelo plays, LaMelo would be by far the most dynamic ball handler they've faced since opening week. That's been one of the subplots of what's happened over this win streak, is they've been playing a lot of mediocre ball handling, and that's where it could get a little bit trickier. They play Steph in the first game, they play Ant in the next game, and then it's been a lot of mediocre handlers since it. Like, Luka's been by far the best ball handler. Austin's been the best ball handler on the floor in every matchup since then by a pretty wide margin. So I think if LaMelo played,
Dennis Schroeder, no Russell Westbrook, no.
Dude, I was literally looking at when I saw the starting lineups for the Kings Warriors game last night. I was like, book Russ for 25, 15, and 15. Like, it's just gonna be the tech, and he got close to that. He nearly got it done. But anyway, so the Hornets game will be a fun test if they get a real ball handler to go against. The Thunder game, I have my eye on two things. Lu Dort on Luka. Lu Dort has done a number on Luka over the years, kind of just beats the heck out of him for the entire game. So like, that would be an interesting challenge to see. How does Austin look against a really athletic set of guards that pressures the ball? Just a real test of their athleticism, and ultimately the bar. It's the bar for the league. And I think that's a team that you need to have size and play. Like, I'm a big believer in, to beat OKC, you need big playmakers that can bully some of their smaller guards and that can pass through their aggression. And so I think LeBron fits that pretty heavily. So that's going to be a hard game for them to win without LeBron. But I still think that'll be at least a revealing bit of data for us in terms of how Austin and Luka handle their matchups. Pelicans just get a professional win. The Bucks, if you guys remember when we went to Milwaukee at the tail end of last season, they cut us to pieces. And a big part of that is it's a difficult team to game plan for because Giannis brings this crazy downhill element that you have to account for with a lot of like packing the paint. A lot of stuff that they did against San Antonio last night, like gapping, sinking off the corners, that kind of stuff, right? But the Bucks can really shoot the ball. And they've been an excellent offense to start the year in large part because of that combination of the downhill force of Giannis, and not just Giannis, but also Ryan Rollins and Cole Anthony, and kickout passes to just a bunch of dudes who are knockdown shooters. And so I think that the Bucks will present a real challenge. And as you mentioned, Trevor, there's like a back-to-back like rest element to that too. And knowing the Lakers and the way they've kind of approached things this year, I wouldn't be surprised if we had a few guys out of the lineup in that game. But I would say 4-1 would be a huge win, and I'd consider 3-2 to be a win.
I think 3-2 should be the goal, but I think 4-1 is in play because honestly, you mentioned the Pelicans at the top and it got me chuckling because you could probably rest some guys in that game and win that one, right? Like I know they won a couple games here recently after their winless start, but that might be the matchup where you can sit a Luka or an Austin if they're dealing with, you know, Austin's dealing with the groin, Luka's dealing with the leg contusion. Maybe if you're still managing that stuff, you could sit one or both potentially and still win that game. I mean, I didn't think they were going to win the Portland game, and they won the Portland game without all three of those guys. And then we have the subplot, obviously, of LeBron potentially coming back, though Shams reported he's not going to be making the trip as of right now. So it seems more likely once the Lakers get back. But I agree that they get tested in different ways in each matchup with Atlanta. It's going to be, I think, the collective size, perimeter athleticism, speed. It's a group that gets out in transition a lot. It's also a group that I think is going to test DeAndre Ayton's pick and roll defense a bit. I think like the one area that he has struggled a little bit has been pick and pop bigs. And Kristaps Porzingis is a guy who will test that, and not just test that at the 3-point line, but this is a guy who likes to shoot several feet behind the 3-point line. So I think LA has to monitor him in both pick and pop situations, but also transition situations. Porzingis into trail threes from like, he'll hit those bombs from 27, 28 feet that you're kind of scrambling. You're not really paying attention. Then all of a sudden Porzingis is walking into a deep uncontested three. So I think that one should be a one that they win. I think the blueprint for them losing would be a lot of turnovers and just Dyson Daniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker just wreaking havoc, which is possible. But I don't know if they have the offensive firepower to keep up with the Lakers, assuming that Austin can return by then. Then you have Charlotte, which is like, could, I guess, be a sneaky trap-ish game for LA if they don't take them seriously. But I think up to this point, they basically showed up and taken every game seriously. So I assume that trend will continue. Then OKC is the big one. I think to Jason's point, like they are going to miss LeBron in that game. And I think that is like, I mentioned it in a prior show that Chris Finch talked about, you can't blitz Luka when LeBron is out there because of the 4-on-3, 3-on-2 playmaking. I think OKC is going to test that with no LeBron. And obviously they've just been a juggernaut blowing teams out. Shea has not played in 4 fourth quarters because they have just been blitzing everybody. Like it's, and they've had their own stuff. No J-Dub, Chet's missed half the games. Caruso's been in and out. You know, they just lost finally to Portland, but they were without half the rotation as well. So that'll be a tough one. And then New Orleans, like they, as long as they show up, they should win that one. But then the Milwaukee one obviously is going to be like, that's almost a schedule loss. Second night of a back-to-back, closing out a 5-game road trip where you're all over the country. That's a pretty tough game. So I think 3-2 should be the goal and the standard for this trip. But 4-1, I think, is in play, whether it's losing to OKC or Milwaukee to close the trip.
Yeah, I would agree. I think 3-2, I'd feel pretty good about with wins over Atlanta, Charlotte, and New Orleans. Charlotte is the one that could be a sneaky trap game. Like we said, they can be a bit more of an explosive offense, especially, again, if LaMelo Ball plays. We did see last year where he had a really big game against the Lakers coming out of, I believe that was coming out of the All-Star break, and he was excellent there. That'll be something to keep an eye on. New Orleans is the one that you got to show up for. You can't just overlook them. Also worth noting, Zion Williamson, believe he was reported out 7 to 10 days with a hamstring thing, which would put him right in line to return just in time.
He'll come back against the Lakers.
Exactly. Exactly. We know he's playing in that one. So maybe that'll make them a little more formidable. But I do think this is going to reveal a lot about this Lakers team, because the road could certainly test you. The trip can be a challenge. That game against Milwaukee, I'm not going to count this team out in any situation, but as we said, the last game of a road trip by itself, that inherently is typically a trap game. Then you add on that it's the second night of a back-to-back, no LeBron back at this point, and there's significant travel between the prior game and this game. That is going to be a really tough one to close things out. But I do think this is going to tell us a lot about the Lakers as a team, their ability to come together. And I just hope, guys, I hope that this team can stay on the floor and we can get more of a glimpse of Luka and Austin together, and we don't get more setbacks where we have this revolving door of players. Because so far the Lakers have withstood it, but it's going to be a challenge on this road trip if they don't have everybody aside from, you know, the no ones we know are out, LeBron and Adu Thiro and perhaps Maxi Kleber, Gabe Vincent. They need everybody else to be available for this trip if they're going to get to that 4-1 mark.
Of note here quickly, they're 4-0 on the road this season and 3-2 at home. And that's interesting because last year they were one of the best home teams in the NBA and one of the few West playoff teams that I believe they might have had the worst road record of the West playoff teams, or second worst. So already like a promising start on the road for this group.
We mentioned LeBron, and LeBron James will not be on the road trip. As you know, I hope that they continue that road record. That would be absolutely fantastic. No LeBron James for this trip. It looks like the earliest that he could return, though, potentially that next game against Utah, which will be a home game. Then they have a few days off. Then they go back out on the road. So we're looking at November 18th would be the earliest possible LeBron return. I know we talked last week about why none of the three of us are overly concerned with LeBron messing up the chemistry of this team. But as Jovan foreshadowed earlier, what is this going to mean for the starting lineup? I believe we've all been on the side of Marcus Smart should stick in the starting five. Has the beginning of the season here changed any of your thinking? Jason, we'll start with you on what the Lakers starting five should be when they have everybody healthy, LeBron James back in action as well.
So when you look at the data, I was just pulling some basic numbers from the start of the season, pairing those three guys with Luka. So like Luka and Jake LaRavia is plus 1.4 net to start the season, according to Cleaning the Glass. Luka plus Marcus Smart plus 21 net. We talked earlier in the season about whether or not Marcus, you know, had like quote unquote like played into the like earning of that small forward spot. I'd argue that he has at this point. But at the same time, Luka and Rui is plus 8 per 100 possessions. There's some continuity there with last year with LeBron. Rui has shown the ability to kind of transition into more of a cutter when LeBron and Luka are both on the floor, because the two of them are just so good at passing, and LeBron has become such a gifted catch-and-shoot player as well. I think you can't go wrong between Marcus and Rui. It really comes down to how you want to configure. If JJ wants to continue with switching looks, I'd go with Rui. If JJ wants to continue with drop looks with Ayton, I think he should go with Smart. I think a lot of that is going to be, you know, kind of a JJ's base scheme dependent, but I don't think you can go wrong with either of those. I will say, like, if you forced me right now to pick one, I think I'd lean Rui. And my reasoning for that is just because Rui's playing so well, and the fact that I think he's more likely to struggle with the transition to a bench role versus if you look at Smart and you go like, hey, listen, man, like, we're trying to keep Rui in his groove. We're going to keep him with the starters. You're going to get all the closing minutes if you're having one of those nights where your body feels good and you're in a good spot. But like, I just trust your ability to kind of seamlessly come into bench groups and make the whole thing work. So I'm going to have you come off the bench. I think Marcus is more likely to succeed in that role than if the roles were reversed and you give Marcus the starting job and then you go to Rui like, hey, man, you're going to get your chances when you get him. Let's see how it goes. I think that could be a little bit harder for Rui to manage.
Jovan, you still with me on Team Smart? Start Smart? Marcus Start? I don't know where we need to land with that. Or are you more on Rui? Yes. Maybe Jake LaRavia? Where do you go?
Say it fast five times. so I'm glad we're like kind of disagreeing for one of the few times to start this show. Because I think I have Rui third on my starting list. Ooh. And I get, so from a politics perspective, I think we have to acknowledge, like, Rui's been very clear that he wants to start. JJ has also acknowledged publicly that when he's deciding on the starting group and some of the rotation stuff, that player preferences and how he thinks players will react matters. And so if I'm penciling in, if we're doing like the line here in terms of the starting favorites and ranking them, I still would have Rui as the favorite, in just largely because I think it really matters to him, to Jason's point. And I think he is a guy statistically as a Laker has performed better as a starter compared to coming off the bench. So I think he will be the starter. I do not agree with that, though, in large part. I think Marcus has a strong case, but I think Jake LaRavia has made a really strong case. And we were talking about the 3-point shooting earlier. Right now, the only two Lakers, I'm going to put Nick Smith and his 50% 3-point shooting aside as a, you know, low volume guy up to this point. But the only two rotation guys who are shooting above league average from three right now are Rui and Jake LaRavia. And Rui's at 47%, which is ridiculous. But Jake is at almost 41%. And I think, like, that is the in my opinion, the key advantage that Rui has over Jake. Like, probably that in the pull-up mid-range, which has been nice. But I wonder how much of that will be there when LeBron is back and just, like, the usage kind of decreases from Rui. Like, right now, obviously, he's benefited from Austin being out or LeBron being out. Like, he's been counted on more offensively. But when we get into, like, who complements these guys better, I think once you put the shooting aside, Jake is just a better all-around player. He's a better defender on and off the ball. He's a better rebounder. He's a better ball handler. He's a better playmaker. He's a better passer. Better offensive rebounder. I think even the cutting, I've been impressed with Jake. So I'm like, from an all-around perspective, if we're like talking specifically, okay, can Rui like spot up better and be more of a catch and shoot guy? And can he attack a closeout, rack it, hit, a one dribble pull up from 16 feet? Sure. But Jake just contributes in far more ways. And I think for what that starting group needs, like, I've really liked, to a lesser extent, Marcus, but also, you know, both Marcus and Jake as second side creators and playmakers and what they've been able to do out of the advantages that Austin and Luka have created. I don't think Rui is close to being the level of decision maker or processor that Marcus and Jake are. So I think Jake might be like kind of the in the middle choice between Rui and Marcus, where you're getting some of the offensive stuff from Rui, and then you're getting also some of the Marcus like defensive playmaking. So I've been kind of swinging in the way of Jake. However, I still will pick Marcus for now. I would like to see a little bit more consistency from deep from him. He's shooting 23%, small sample size, but that's not good enough. And like, that's the one thing for me that gives me some hesitance with Marcus starting is, it's just, you know, if he's going to shoot 23%, that's obviously like, it's tough to play, even though he's obviously going to have a big role in this team. But I think due to politics, it will be Rui, but for me, it's more between Marcus and Jake based on fit.
Yeah, I like the idea of Jake. He is kind of that middle ground between the defense that Marcus Smart brings, the offense, certainly from Rui Hachimura. He's a jack of all trades. He can do a little bit of everything for you out there on the floor. And I think, you know, JJ has praised him quite a bit. I asked JJ the other day about Jake LaRavia specifically and how he's fit into this team. And he was gushing about what he's done on the defensive side of the ball, saying people are focusing too much on what he's doing offensively, which certainly is good. But it's been the defensive side of the ball that's been really impactful for LaRavia. So I think he certainly deserves to be in the mix there. But I also want to add this into the conversation. JJ last night talked a little bit about Marcus Smart. You can see it if you're watching the games, being the coach on the floor for the Lakers defense and saying that when they get LeBron back, that gives them a second guy that can do that. Jason, should that push them towards Marcus Smart coming off the bench, so you do have more of a stagger once LeBron is back with either LeBron or Smart on the floor at all times in order to maintain that sort of coach on the floor element defensively?
Yeah, even a bit above and beyond that coach on the floor element, which I think that's super valuable, especially when you do have some guys on the floor that, like, for as smart as their core guys are, like Luka and Austin and LeBron and Marcus, like that and Jake, I think fits into that group as well. Like those five guys, you get some really smart players there. I think Gabe too, when he's healthy, is one of those players. But there's a lot of guys like between DeAndre Ayton, between Jackson Hayes, between Rui Hachimura. There are definitely guys out there that could use guidance and stability in their lineup groupings. I also think that Marcus brings just, like, I was talking about this on my show this morning. Like, he brings like a straight playmaking element. Like, he's not great at any one thing. Like, it's not like he's a knockdown 3-point shooter or a deadly closeout attacker. It's not like he's spamming high ball screens and surgically picking teams apart. It's not like he's guarding the other team's best player and just shutting the dude down like Lou Dort, or blocking shots at the rim like prime Dwayne Wade. He's just finding ways to make plays. Like, he'll disrupt a random ball handler and get a steal, or he'll jump a passing lane, or he'll take a charge, or he'll make some connective pass that ties a sequence together and ends up in a basket, or he will curl off of an action and hit a little floater in the lane or make a nice kick out pass. Like, it's just, he keeps like just winning these like little sequences of handfuls of possessions throughout the games that swing like momentum throughout the games. And I actually think that there's a lot of value in adding that to groups that need the support. And I look at the starting group as a group that doesn't need as much support. Now, ultimately, like we saw in the net rating, like if it turns out that Smart with Austin and Luka and LeBron and Ayton, when they do get those opportunities, whether it's through closing games or closing the first half or whatever it is that those minutes come to the surface, it may ultimately become the case that he's just the shoe-in fifth guy and that's the way that it goes. But we need to see what it looks like. And it ultimately, Marcus will be the piece that either ties that starting lineup together and makes them transcendently great, or it may be that he's a little redundant there for the reasons you mentioned. He's, you know, the same kind of captain that LeBron is. And maybe that's where his 3-point shooting, which hasn't been as big of an issue in terms of his total impact, becomes a bigger issue in that particular lineup. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. So I think like we'll see in the large sample, but I like the idea of staggering him as just a positive impact player with those bench groups.
I think that's a good thought. You have to make a choice. Jason, you're going Rui?
I'm going Rui.
Jovan?
Politics. Best chance for all three guys to play their best basketball.
You, and to be clear, your choice, not who, what you think JJ is going to do.
Yeah, you know, but that's my thing. Like, as a competitor, I want them to win. And sure. I think that's what I just think the best version. I think Jake LaRavia and Marcus Smart can slot in and out of any lineup. They're just too smart and too versatile. And I think Rui is a little bit more like he needs a static set of circumstances to succeed. And that's what kind of guides me towards Rui in that specific situation.
You guys just keep making points that are making me flip-flop here. I think with all points considered, I would probably go Jake. And the reason, like, I think a lot of the reasons you just argued for Marcus to come off the bench make sense to me of staggering. Also, just like the playmaking and keeping a secondary guy where if you're staggering the big three, you can always have Marcus with one of them to at least have like that competent secondary ball handler with one of them. I think a point that Jason has made a lot over the last couple of years, I like staggering LeBron and Rui too, though. And that's where like I kind of settle on Jake, where to be clear, like I made the point before, I think the ideal fifth starter is not on this roster currently. And all three of these guys have clear strengths and clear arguments to start. All three of them have clear weaknesses and clear reasons why they don't complement those four guys, right? Like Marcus is not, I just looked it up. He's shooting 21% on catch and shoot threes this season. Oh. That is terrible.
He's leaving them all short too. Mm-hmm. It's coming off of his hand weird. It's kind of rolling off his palm. It's going super high and it's barely grazing the front of the rim.
So like the shooting's been rough to start. Rui is not good enough defensively in terms of, at least in a perimeter context of, this player needs to be able to defend twos and threes primarily, but even some ones, that is not in Rui's wheelhouse or his strength. And then Jake, I think you could argue like Rui's better offensively, at least in like a finishing context. And then Marcus is better defensively. So Jake is kind of like, it's sort of a... Oh, man.
You're putting yourself in the starting
lineup. I set myself up for this. Yes, I should. I nominate myself to be the fifth starter.
You know, the ideal guy's just not on the roster yet. You know what I mean?
Listen, I'm 2 years removed from the Achilles. Like, I'm ready to go. 10-day. Two-way.
Well, I love that this is where we landed, because Jason's got Rui, Jovan's got Laravia. I know I just made the case for staggering LeBron and Marcus Smart, but I like the idea of Marcus as a tone setter defensively right from the outset of the game. So I'm going to lead towards him. The great thing is, as I think Jason alluded to, I don't know that there's necessarily a wrong answer here. You've got just different answers for what each guy can bring. So it'll be interesting to see the way the Lakers go with this. I know we are running short on time, but we've got some super chats. Are you guys okay to do some rapid fire here?
Let's do it.
Okay. So let's start here. Raider film run throughout. Kleba, Connect, Dalton plus a first for Clay and Christie. If you're going to burn a first, it would be great to see our old friend Max Christie back, but does this meet the bar the Lakers need to be at if they're going to use a first-round pick?
If the Mavs trade Max Christie back to the Lakers, Mavs fans will legitimately revolt. There's no chance of that happening.
I don't see Dallas trading with LA in general. I also think with Clay, there'd be kind of a dynamic of like figuring out his role, where he has slipped a lot defensively. And I don't know if you want him in like a closing or starting group in an ideal sense. So I have a hard time seeing Dallas trading with Nico. I would actually like respect Nico more if he did another trade with the Lakers. That's like the ultimate FU to that fan base.
All Rob needs to do is invite him out for coffee. Everything will be fine, and a deal will get done. Yeah, could you imagine? Yeah. Mavs fans would be beside. They are already.
Max has shot the ball really well this year. Yes. Like, I think he's probably the best player in that group of five players. And like, I think a first round pick is hard to sell in that case. Maybe if Dalton was playing better.
Sign me up for the Max reunion, though. I will know.
Yeah. I'd love it. I think he's perfect. He's literally the kind of player they need. But it's tough.
All right, Sed throws out Keon Ellis is in the Kings doghouse, it seems like. I've been a big proponent of Keon Ellis and that the Kings need more Keon Ellis's or that style of player on this roster, not less of them. Would you guys be interested in Keon Ellis on the Lakers? What would you be willing to give up to make it happen if the Kings go full Kings and decide to trade him?
I think he's the perfect kind of player that they need. They're kind of already heavy on like the bigger, smarter defensive forwards. I think having that smaller, quicker screen navigating ball pressure guard that can knock down threes is a huge value add to this team. This kind of falls into the category of being opportunistic, like we talked about earlier, like the right kind of guy who's like in quote unquote in the doghouse or that's being undervalued elsewhere that you just pop up and take advantage of. The problem is if I'm the Kings, I probably want a first for Keon, and I just don't see the Lakers trading a first for a role player under any circumstances.
I push for Dalton and a second, or Dalton and like a pick swap, maybe a couple pick swaps. Kings love offense. They don't value defensive players. So just throw, give them Dalton and say, hey, this guy can average 15 off the bench for you guys as you don't play any defense whatsoever.
Russ, LaVine, Sabonis, Dalton just, Connect. Yeah, put them all out, just all out there together. All of them out there together. Luis said, who is the best big three, you guys or the Lakers big three? Well, Jovan's putting himself in the starting lineup at this point. So I don't know. He may be part of the Lakers.
The ego big three. On this guy, man. The ego on this guy. It's us for sure. It's us. Come on.
I'm so excited to see LeBron play with these guys, man. I can hardly stand it.
Yeah. No, it's the Lakers have the best big three in the NBA.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. We've got, I'm so confused why JJ didn't play Nick Smith Jr. more last night.
Two pick sixes in the first half. That's it. Did you see Marcus Smart get super pissed off on the second one? Nick had a moment the other night against Portland. But like he just had a couple of really sloppy mistakes in the beginning, and it was just really hard to overcome that, I think, for JJ. Because Bronny played a first half shift and then didn't play in the second half too. He just kind of shrunk his rotation.
Yeah, I think with Nick, he's had several of those going back like from the preseason into the regular season where he just lofts these like lazy is too strong of a term, but sort of like just not sloppy. Forceful side passes that just get picked in into transition. So he's got to clean that up. Like that you can't have that.
And that those are devastating just part of his development
plays. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's go here. Brandon said, what would we could we trade DK, Gabe, and Maxey for? Don't see any of them come deadline. Brooks, Wiggins, Herb, Hayes, Ruiz, been solid. Ayton, Smart, Jake were good pickups. So, I mean, that is probably the Lakers, like, default. Remember the year where, like, the default trade package was Talen Horton-Tucker, and that was it? And if you didn't want Talen Horton-Tucker, they didn't have much else that they could trade. This seems to be kind of the baseline trade package for the Lakers, the expiring contracts, and then Dalton Knecht. I would assume, based on the conversations we've had throughout the show, you guys are going to say athleticism, 3-and-D type wing would be the target. Do you think it's actually achievable to get a player like that with that package?
Probably not, unless you're attaching draft compensation, just because Dalton Knecht's the only guy who might be considered a positive asset there, and he kind of has to play himself into that at this point. I am keyed in. Like, guys, I know Wiggins gets thrown around all the time, but there's a very specific reason why I'm so keyed in on him. First of all, it's his athleticism impacts the game in a bunch of different ways. That dude can slash closeouts. He can guard the other team's best player at a high level. That dude can attack mismatches on the drive and in the post. That dude is an awesome, like, game-changing rebounder. Like, he's a very, very good rebounder, which I think would be super valuable at the position. And he's having a very, very good season in terms of his offensive polish. He's shooting the ball really well this year. Like, I think he's like the textbook guy that checks all the boxes, but I just think he's a dream, because in all likelihood, in order to get him, you're going to have to include Rui, which then complicates the situation. And so for me, it's more about being opportunistic. Dylan Brooks would be great, but is he going to be available at the deadline, right? Herb Jones would be great. Is that guy going to be available? Like, a lot of these guys are really just Keon Ellis. We talked about a lot of it is like, which of these guys are actually going to be legitimately shopped in good faith when we get to February?
Yeah, I would rank them for me, Herb Jones, then Wiggins, then Dylan Brooks. But I also think that's probably the, like, the reverse ranking is the ranking in terms of guys who would be most available. Like, with Brooks, it's sort of like Phoenix is aimless right now. One of the worst teams in the West. They've actually probably punched above their weight to start the season. But I think with a larger sample size, they will stabilize as a team that's going to be a lottery team. And at that point, it's like, if you can flip Brooks for get off the longer term money, get some expirings, get some more cap flexibility, and potentially get an asset or two out of that, I think that makes sense for Phoenix. With Miami, I think it comes down to just like, what's their goal and how competitive are they? And they've obviously had a bit of an up and down start to the season, but like without Tyler Hero, I think like it's probably been more on like the positive side. So do they want to flip Wiggins and you know, does a guy like a Rui even make sense for them with their current ambitions compared to what Wiggins provides? And then with Herb Jones, I think it might just be like New Orleans is so bad that they don't even have their pick, which is an complete disaster. And it's like, that's a guy I would give up a first for if I'm the Lakers. Like, if you could flip, I would flip Rui, or I would try to keep Rui, but if it came down to Rui and a first for Herb Jones, I would do that in a heartbeat.
Well, yeah. He's a better player at his respective position than Rui would be for the future. So essentially, like, if you looked at the future of the Lakers and you're like, man, are we going to have a mediocre dude at the three next to Rui, or a mediocre dude at the four next to Herb? Like, I'm with you, Jovan. Like, that's the type of like Herb Jones is one of the very best 3-and-D guys in the entire NBA.
That would be a big step towards a post LeBron future, really maximizing a Luka and Austin pairing, is having a defender like Herb Jones on the floor with them. Yep. I think that would be fantastic.
I think they could compete with OKC in that case, like really compete.
Come on, Pels, blow it up. Dunn said, Trevor, Jason, Jovan, who are your top trades? Well, we kind of just addressed it, right? Those are the guys, but we
appreciate it. Thank you for the super chat, Dunn. We appreciate it, man.
Let's go here. TaylorMade said, does the balance of the team remind you of an Olympic team?
It's hard to explain. You know what this team is starting to remind me of is kind of like a little bit of like a Luka Doncic version of the 2023 Denver Nuggets, in the sense that they're like not particularly fast, but they're very big. They've got this like supremely gifted bully ball superstar that kind of greases the wheels and everything. But everyone's super high IQ, and they're capable of defending at a level above what you would think their on-paper talent would be, just because they're all super smart. And I think that's what the Lakers need to be trying to fit into, is like essentially looking at the 2023 Denver Nuggets as the mold for their championship goal. Because if you really look back through NBA history, every team in recent NBA history, the Thunder, the Celtics, the Warriors, the Bucks, the Lakers, the Raptors, going back to the Warriors, every single one of them at the 4 and 5, their front court has been like a transcendently good defensive front court. And that's not what this team's going to have. So like, to me, the pathway, the mold is that 2023 Nuggets team. We're smart, we're unstoppable offensively, and we just kind of gamify the defense to get you to play below your capability, and we win on the margins, and we out-execute you at the end of games. That, to me, is the path.
All right, let's go.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I have no notes. No, nothing to add there.
10 out of 10.
I love Portland. They beat teams we don't like and lose to us. I could tell you from conversations with folks in Portland, the feeling is not mutual. Portland does not love LA, but or at least the Blazers. But you know, they definitely, let's not forget too, they helped out with buying out DeAndre Ayton. So thank you indeed to Portland.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they would just lower the asking price for some of their players, that would
that would help. That would indeed be helpful. But I do think with Ayton on the team,
like Tamani Kamara on this team is
that'd be terrifying.
That's the perfect.
They're fun to watch too. They've been Portland, Chicago, and Miami have played some of the weirdest basketball to start this season. Just the insane pace and dribble drive attack. And I've enjoyed watching them. I have not watched Portland OKC from last night yet. That's on my list though, because I every time I see OKC lose, you just got to watch to see like how, because I think that can be informative. But I am excited to see how they pulled that one off.
I think Portland and Nico both on the Lakers Christmas list. They'll be getting gifts this year. Quick note, Tumani Kamara is unfortunately not trade eligible this season because of when he, before we get questions about it, because of when he signed his extension and the level of the extension. Maybe I missed it, but no mention of the addition of Adu. I think he has potential for immediate impact. Love the show and keep up the great work, guys. I have been trying to tamp down the Adu Thuro expectations as I do with any second round pick. Where are we at though on Adu, the guy who fans are all excited because they're seeing the highlights of his head at the rim and stuff from practice. Where are you guys at on him?
I think we might see him more than people think, just literally because of how cautious the Lakers have been with their injury reports. Like, I think there's a version of this where we see a lot of nights like guys, Bronny got real rotation minutes this week. So
he would have played in that Portland game.
Sure. Yeah. Exactly.
Both of the Portland games.
Yeah. I think he's going to see the floor some, but he has quite literally no chance to play when this team is healthy. So like, I don't really see him as much of a factor in their plans at all. I mean, maybe like in the 5-year plan, sure, but not.
JJ's called this a development year for him, so I get like he does the actualized version of him, maybe like the mature version of him can help this group, and I think if he can hit his ceiling, he certainly will have a role in the Lakers program moving forward. But to expect a second round rookie to come in off of, like, he's been dealing with this knee injury recovery since March. So we're on 8 months here of him being like rehabbing, recovering, then being available, then being unavailable. He didn't play in summer league. He didn't play in the preseason. He's yet to play at all as a Laker. I think we have to temper the expectations with that. Now, maybe he proves us wrong. And to Jason's point, like, there will be opportunities where with the Lakers' health to open the season, like, I could see him getting a shot. Could he theoretically outplay Vando at some point, like as like the ninth man in the rotation? Maybe. But I think that's wishful thinking. And realistically, like, I think he's likely to be the 11th or 12th guy in the rotation.
All right, let's go here. Elijah said, playoff smart equals game changer like playoff Rondo. Player, coach, effort, defense. There's, and both guys coming from Boston and on previous stops in their careers. So there are certainly some similarities. Different players overall, but certainly Rondo much more the offensive maestro. But in terms of the coach on the floor role, yeah, I could see the comparisons between Marcus Smart and the legend that is playoff Rondo.
Yeah, you know, you go back in NBA history and like it seems like every champion has a guy like this, whether it's like Andre Iguodala on the Golden State Warriors or it's like Shane Battier on the Miami Heat or like Boris Diaw on the San Antonio Spurs, kind of like a older late career vet who's played in a million big playoff games, who just kind of knows what to do in any given situation and has a great deal of versatility. And those dudes just kind of, we talked about Marcus as like kind of a, just a playmaker, so to speak, on both ends of the floor. I think those kind of guys are typically staples on championship teams. And it's been really fun to watch him on this team, because I feel like we haven't had this kind of guy in a few years.
I just love Marcus Smart. I love watching him play. I love how much the gamesmanship, the antics of, he'll be assaulting a player for 10 seconds. And then the second the player gets the, or is about to get the ball, he'll retreat, and then the player will elbow him and get an offensive foul or something like that. Like the taking the charges, diving on the ground for loose balls. I think this group has needed that type of player. I think it, similar to last year with DFS, he came in and made an immediate impact. There's a reason why DFS was the plus minus leader for LA last year after he got traded there. Marcus Smart has been the same. They need this type of guy, and I think he's checked that box and then some.
See, you're going to talk yourself into starting him again.
I've been thinking about it. I'll be honest. I've been thinking about it since I think it's choose your own adventure with those three, right?
All right, let's finish with this one. Last one. Dylan said, would you take back DeJounte Murray to sweeten the pot to get her? That's a lot of salary to add.
Yeah, we're talking about salary matching pieces on that. I'm trying to pull it up real quick. The salary matching
million
on that would be absurd.
Yeah, 30.8
DeJounte
million
makes
season.
31 and Herb Jones can't makes get there. 14. You're in it for $45 million. That's just really difficult. You'd be sending out too many players.
So, I mean, you could get there, I guess, with what, Rui, Gabe, and Max, you get close, I guess, if you throw in Dalton as the fourth guy. Mm-hmm. But I would rather not give up that much. I know Laker fans have a soft spot for Murray, but you also have to look at his future salary, 32.8, and then for next year. And then I'll break the news now, $30.8 million player option for 2027-28. He will be picking that up. So I don't think you want to lock yourself into the extra $63.5 million of DeJounte moving forward.
Agreed. Don't see them looking to do that, especially when Rob Palenka's favorite word is optionality. That closes off quite a bit of an optionality.
I was a big fan of DeJounte back in the past. Mm-hmm. Like when there was a different version of the team that really
like
needed
two years
someone
ago.
That could, yeah, but it's a different day and age, and he's got a messed up Achilles. So that's tough for a dribble drive guy.
Yeah, it is. All right, everybody. Well, you know, the last time we did a show, it was the night after Austin Reeves had the buzzer beater against Minnesota. Now, here's a show. They're on a 5-game win streak. But next time, it'll be right after the Lakers take on the Thunder. So we'll see if our good fortune continues and our next show gets to celebrate a Lakers win over the defending champs. Wouldn't that be a fun one? Everybody in the chat, please make sure you are subscribed to the channel. Turn on those notifications as well. Jason, Jovan, guys, this is, as always, this has become one of my highlights of the week. Thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with you guys.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was great to see you guys. And hopefully we have another, we're either going to have another super exciting win streak show, or we're going to be like, we just learned a lot because the champs kicked our butt. So I'm excited either way for next week.
Shout out to you guys. Shout out to the chat, and looking forward to keeping this going.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. Thank you again. Till next time, see ya, and stay safe.